Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today are Andy.
Hiya.
Duncan.
Hello.
And John.
Hello, it's me. I'm here.
Thank God.
I know it doesn't count for much, but this is technically our 20th official episode, not counting episode 00, episode 15.5, or the three in-betweens episodes we recorded. So, yeah.
And here we were thinking we wouldn't get past episode 10.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Episode, someone makes fun of me in the first episode for saying that we will need double digits. So we're doing good. And to cap it off, Duncan is actually excited to talk about an anime.
One
that I don't think anyone else had known anything about.
No.
Yeah,
you want to talk about it, Duncan?
It's definitely been not the most high profile of this season's releases. It's one which is called Netju no Susumi, or Recovery of a MMO Junkie. Basically, it's part of its appeal is that it's halfway between a slice of life and halfway between a sort of MMO type anime. So it's like, I don't know.
By MMO type anime, do you mean like isekai genre, like the whole other world?
The MMO bits in it remind me a lot of the way Log Horizon treated it.
Sure.
Basically, the premise of the show is that it's about a 30-something salary woman who loses her job. It's not entirely clear if she quits or if she's fired or. And it's heavily implied that there's either a breakdown or a stress-related problem which leads to her leaving her work. And it's about the way she, after becoming unemployed, ends up completely not knowing what to do with her time and just sort of floating around to try and find something with some structure and sort of floating back towards games and finding an MMO and finding a guild within that MMO and how she uses the sort of activities and structure of that guild to sort of once again give her day-to-day a bit more structure. That's all we have so far, along with sort of the beginnings of a romance between her and another person. But it's all very vague at the moment. It's all quite slice of lifey and sort of experiential MMO. It's not like dramatic anime cuts and sort of big sword slashes and magical explosions. It's more people all crafting each other clothes and stuff like that. But for me in particular, it's like a couple of years back, when I stopped working in the library and was unemployed for a while, I was playing quite heavily into World of Warcraft at the time. And I think it's hitting quite a few things on the nose for me about that experience of using a game to as a sort of patch for this lack of structure in your life otherwise.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's quite sweet as well. She's obviously quite competent in some ways, but also not necessarily used to interacting with other people online. If anyone who's ever been unemployed for any period of time knows that when you're like that, you are in utter, you don't want to speak about it. It's like someone's like, oh, so what are you doing online at 12 o'clock this day? Well, I'm obviously a university student, so I couldn't be possibly unemployed. No.
You there's a lot of guilt and shame and covering up of the fact that you just like don't really have much structure in your life, because what you have with that is besides a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know, so far dealing with that stuff really spot on for me. And obviously having a 30-something female main character is not that usual for anime.
No, that's pretty rare.
I don't know. It's just good. I can't say much more than that. It's not flashy. It's not super dramatic so far. It just deals with its situation very well, and it's got two very good central performances in the main female character, whose name is Morikoa, which is she gets made fun of, and Yuta Sakurai. Completely messed that one
up. But he doesn't. They don't know each other in real life, but we see both of them.
That's the twist. The twist is that they know each other online through their alter egos. She's playing a male character, and he's playing a female character, and they meet coincidentally IRL, and don't yet realize that they are friends online, and so there's like a certain amount of, I don't know, star-crossed lovers and identity confusion going on. But I said before you were recording this, I found something out when I was doing my research on this, which explained to me why I like this show, and that it turns out it's because I think of the two voice actresses who play the main female and the main male. Gorm's normally the one who knows who's actors and actors very well, but Andy does it quite well too, and occasionally John. But I'm going to say these two, and let's see if you can actually tell me why, from these names, why I like the show. So we have...
Okay. So it's like a test. Main...
Yeah.
I already know the answer to this, which is why I'm excited to do it.
So the main female is... I don't know which way I'm supposed to say the names. Mamiko Noto.
Noto Mamiko, if you want to do the proper Japanese order.
Okay. That's the way around to do it. Okay. Noto Mamiko. And the main male is Sakurai Takahiro. So can you...
They don't personally ring a bell to me, but that doesn't mean it doesn't ring a bell to the other lot. Although, is it one of those things where I'll be kicking myself?
I don't know the names of any voice actresses or actors in anything. Well,
inscribe this on your heart that Noto Mamiko is one of the greats, and Duncan likes her because she's Ben 10.
Her. Yeah.
And do you know who he is?
I'm actually trying to quietly look him up right now. I know a lot of stuff he's from, but I don't know specifically what
you want to scroll down to you as well.
Oh, is he also in that too?
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool. Is it the same production company?
Nope.
Oh, he's Osamatsu from Osamatsu-san. Yeah.
No, he's Yasuburo. He's the two main... Their main characters are the two main characters from Eccentric Family.
From what, sorry? Oh, Eccentric Family. Right.
It's basically the main couple from that. The main
They're
couple
not a couple. Ben 10's the worst human.
Why are we going to... We were going to try to make this one short, but if we want to go into whether or not Ben 10 is a good person or a good character...
I feel like I've already done that on...
I mean, she doesn't... Until I actually sort of realized that, I didn't pick it up from the performance at all. She sounds completely different. It's a completely different character. There's very little similarity in the way she performs the character. So it's...
Yeah, to reference bloggers, I know that Evirus, who writes for Karma Burn, basically watches any show that Noto Mamiko's in, and he... has a recurrent catchphrase of Mamikor for like how she really goes all out and has these really like out there performances that have a lot of investment in them while not necessarily being a stock type of performance. So he claims that it steered him right more than it steered him wrong to just always watch stuff that has Noto Mamiko in it. Who knows if that's true or not.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, this is just a really low-key plot, and that's probably why it hasn't stood out, because it doesn't do anything flashy so far. It's just very measured and very well sketched. I mean, the animation's functional and it doesn't. I don't know. It's just
I mean, it's not a big studio. Mm. It's Signal MD, and it's not a well-known director, Yaginuma Kazuyoshi.
Yeah, he's done one or two other things from when I heard that.
Yeah, he directed Bakurano, which has been on my hard drive for now roughly 7 or 8 years without me making an effort to watch it.
Yeah, I think the only thing I knew he did was, bloody hell, I've now forgotten it. I can help you.
He did assistant direction on Rolling Girls, and he was a storyboard artist on Nadia, and that's pretty much
Rolling Girls I was thinking of.
Which I didn't like, and I think we all had very mixed feelings about.
Yeah, we all had
feelings
mixed,
about.
I think.
I don't think I watched it. I think I watched like 3 episodes and gave up because I got bored of it. Yeah, I didn't enjoy that film, that anime.
It was really pretty. It had some really cool like scenes with lots of moving parts and dynamic stuff.
Mm. Yeah. So it actually reminds me of Urahara.
Except Urahara doesn't even grab in the first episode.
Yeah. I think Urahara is one of those things which is watch 3 episodes and probably going to give up.
I watched 5 minutes and gave up. I hated it.
So what else have you been watching then?
Nothing.
Well, there goes my attempt at a seg.
I would say...
Andy, I know. Shut down. Andy was excited about talking about something, though.
Yeah. I've been off the back of what John was talking about last week. I jumped into Ancient Magus Bride, which is it's really fucking good. It's... The stuff I really like about it is the story is it's about a Japanese girl who gets sold as a slave to this person, and I can't remember his name. Hold on.
Elias Ainsworth.
Yes, Elias Ainsworth. Yeah, and Chisei is the main character, and she gets sold off to Elias Ainsworth, who turns out to be a magus, and then it's about and then it's about her becoming an apprentice and sort of he says that she is his wife or like his fiance at the end, but I don't know whether that's sort of like he's expecting her to fall in love with
him. This is sort of spoilers but not really. What are you doing?
No, sorry.
Okay, so it's sort of spoilers to get into this, but not really. The whole ancient, like the whole bride thing, Elias is very ignorant of how humans live, and I'm pretty sure that that's just him being an idiot child who doesn't know better. I don't think it's actually meant to be what it sounds like on the surface. And stuff that happens in the future backs up what I think, so...
Yeah,
I think the way they phrased it was like he hopes that one day that she will decide to become. So
I don't even think that's true. But there are reasons for that I don't want to spoil.
Right. Okay. I mean, the stuff I really love about it is like they've clearly gone to England to take some on-scene locations because the actual world setting is fantastic and beautiful. Like they've gotten British countryside down to a T. They've gotten like that beautiful. He lives in this beautiful, like British, very British cottage. What are you gonna say?
I was gonna say some of that bits I loved, and some of it made me cringe a bit because it's like in the first episode they serve him like the most British food ever. It's like shepherd's pie, fish and chips,
and then they cut a meatloaf
and then
she only gets meatloaf and then leaves the rest of the food. And I'm like, what are you gonna do with the rest of the food? Like, why is that just sitting there? And yes, I agree that was a very funny bit. And then like for me just to look at it and be like, well, they really know what British food is, but I don't know why they've just ignored it all.
Like, I wonder if that's sort of like supposed to be, from what John's saying, whether that's supposed to be like a comment on how ignorant Ainsworth actually is, that he just assumes, okay, this is what British cuisine is. It's a shepherd's pie for everyone.
I don't even know if he eats Like
that's true. I don't think you see meat.
I can't remember.
The daft thing is, Andy, that the one little detail which got me was I think it's in the second or the third episode they're on a train. And they actually got the seat covering colours right.
Yes, I got that as well. I was like, man, that's like National Railway, like rail covers. That's amazing. Like that really made me happy.
It was really weird. I recognize that.
Yeah.
It's really weird in general how both with this and Little Witch Academia, you guys are so gratified to see British stuff in anime.
I'll read or die.
Our country is slowly sinking into the very sea of its own volition. So we've got to take little bits where we can.
It's like I said, the best bit. One of my favourite parts of Little Witch Academia is the police coming up and they look like actual policemen as opposed to like stereotypical policemen you'd expect to see in like Hollywood or whatever.
Ridiculous bobbies?
Like ridiculous bobbies with those hats and like an old like dumb car. But this was actually like a modern policeman. I was like, okay, yeah, that's really cool. That really appeals to me because I guess, like you said, we don't see British media done well or British representation done well, even though this does have a bit stupid over.
I mean, I'm sure it's true for Andy and John with the representations of the US in stuff as well. It's when your country has as big a cultural impact as either the US or Britain has on the English media, which then being the two prime countries of which produce it, they're going to, then when we see other media that has a different cultural thing attempting to portray ours, we notice misrepresentations more because we're used to things normally getting it right.
So ingrained.
Well, my sense of it is almost that like, the high water mark for British influence was some decades ago, and that's kind of the impression, the afterimage that's been left on a lot of other cultures' mindsets.
Yeah.
While the US is constantly blasting out its McDonald's and Levi's jeans and Coca-Cola, and so it's easy to get America right with like just the basic details, and granted, make the people over the top. Like my impression of how the mayor sounded in at the end of Sakura Quest. You're like, I love Japan. But yeah, I'm kind of just blasé to like any details of Americans. Like every half or quarter American girl in an anime who comes back and like is into like being like really outgoing and they're blonde and they love to give hugs and I'm just kind of like whatever. So I can understand abstractly but not necessarily viscerally how you guys like, oh thank god those bobbies don't look like idiots.
But and also like for comparison,
oh they're eating shepherd's pie, so good. The seat cover's the right color.
For comparison, you have like we watched Yoimushi Pedal, there's one of the characters goes to England in the second season and there's like a shot of him drinking tea with the Big Ben in the background and I'm like, oh, yeah, we get it. You're in England. Like, you've said it, like, every episode so far. But, yeah, it's quite cool. And also, the other great thing about it is the folklore is so well done and so accurate. It makes me really happy. Like, I think you might have touched on it as well, John, but, like, yes, last episode. But it's, like, they've really knocked it out of the park with just how accurate and well-made and well and interesting the folklore is in England, which doesn't just like isn't just British folklore, but also like Scottish and Irish folklore. And they're all represented incredibly well, and I really love that. I also just really like how there's loads of small details. Like in the second episode, they go and get some. They go to someone's house to get something created, and I can't remember what it was, or maybe it wasn't revealed.
It was a bunch of tools for Chise.
Oh right, yeah, and maybe that's why, because it didn't come back in. But there's like, so she can see like spirit animals, which basically is what they use to make magic appear, and the spirit animals that she just sort of like naturally attracts kind of follow her, and it's really sweet. So she has like this weird axolotl blue thing in that episode that she sort of like
it's
holds
just, like, crawling
in...
all over her. Yeah,
yeah. And then it, like when they go back to the house, she like there's just a sort of that axolotl like hiding behind the couch and stuff, and you're just like, oh, that's really cool. Like they just like she just like it's obviously like a thing that's gonna come in later. I mean, I know John knows probably is either in agreement or disagreement with me there because you've read the manga. You're pretty you're pretty up on this manga board.
Yeah, I've
I
read
am.
Pretty far into the manga.
But yeah, like my impression of it is just that it's excellent. It's also just like a beautifully animated series.
For the most part, there was a scene in the latest episode where it's trying to show a dragon flying, and it's literally just a dragon on a static background, and none of them are moving. There's some sparkles coming off of him. It's really bad. But for the most part, yeah, it's really good.
I mean, that's supposed to be his sort of dream of flying. So
no, but it wasn't. He wasn't flying. He was just floating in midair, and nothing was moving. It was bad. Like, and then later, it shows him actually flying. So, you know.
Yeah. And it's like a very, it's a very sort of like unsettling undertone between, between Chisei and Elias with like, because she was bought by him as a slave, but then he's freed her, but then like, she's also got this sort of like, I guess this constant thing of like whether she should disobey him or like.
She is very depressed and wants to die, and everybody's constantly telling her stop it. You should learn to love yourself again and love the world around you. And that's like the whole thing with her is she's learning to be happy, and she's also helping Elias to learn how to be more than what he is, if more means human, because he's not human. So they're kind of trying to help each other.
And I maybe it wasn't too good because I've only watched two episodes so far. But yeah, like she's... I really like how sort of reserved and quiet she is as a main character, and how, like, the first episode she did get sucked in a very obvious trap, but then also, like, I felt it was kind of natural for someone who probably...
Yeah, she doesn't know shit, so, I mean, the only thing she knew was that, oh yeah, all these fairies like you because you're who you are, and so she had no reason to mistrust them because she wasn't told.
And I also personally have difficulty placing it in a time period. Is it meant to be modern day, or is it?
You see a modern red London bus with Arriva markings on it in one of the latest episodes.
Yeah. That was in the other episode. Yeah, there was the second episode did have a nice red puff, which was also very nice that there wasn't the traditional like dumb bus that hasn't been in circulation for like 10 years now.
This makes you really want to watch the K-On movie with you, Andy, because that also they're in London for 2 solid hours and it's all just like call-outs to different locations and stuff in London.
Yeah, I know that there's like a pretty popular like pilgrimage around London, and one of the shops that they eat at, like one of the cafes they eat at, has like a picture of the K-On like girls outside, because I guess all of a sudden they got really popular for no reason. And they're like, what? What's going on? Why are loads of people like visiting and taking snaps and stuff? So yeah, that's always been on my list of something to watch. But then my K-On love kind of came and went. So I haven't checked up on that.
Well, maybe for a spotlight someday.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Cool. John, do you have anything that you want to talk about? I mean, we kind of wrung you dry last episode with all the stuff that you're watching.
Sure, I'll talk about Land of the Lustrous. It's the biggest surprise of this season to me, and I think it's also my favorite thing this season so far. It's really, I mentioned last time that it's CG, so that should have put me off, but it doesn't. Like, they take advantage of the CG very well. The hair is, like, super shiny and reflective of light. They do a lot of reflections of other things, like, I'm assuming, like, ray-casted, like, long time to render sort of reflections. When they do a fight scene, everything's so smooth, and they're, like, jumping all over the place and swinging around. And there's a scene where Diamond, who she's trying to rescue Foss, who is the main character, and she's like swinging through the trees. She's like a monkey, and it looks really good. And I never thought I'd say this about an entirely CG anime, but it's one of my, like, it's probably my favorite looking thing this season too.
Really? That's with Ancient Magus Bride.
Yeah. Well, I think Ancient Magus' Bride is competent, but I don't know if I would say that it's like the best. I mean, I like it, but you know.
In terms of looks.
Do you think that because they chose, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm understanding the, are they actually completely made of whatever gem they are? So they yes. fully crystalline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like there's two diamond characters, if I'm not misunderstanding, and one is like she's really fragile if she gets hit in the wrong spot, and the other's really strong. And and she says, she describes it as because she's a single something, like a single crystal. Single faceted, yeah. So she breaks more easily as a result of that. And when they break, they kind of shatter, and like you see their insides, and it looks like just pieces of gems, and it's really cool. Also, like, sort of distressing because it's like they're in pieces, but you know, they can be put back together and healed, so it's fine.
It sounds just like someone had a really smart art idea about how to avoid the number one problem that CGI has. Oh, we can't really do substances which are flexible and nebulous. Let's just make everything.
Well, you say that, but then. Oh, you mean in like 2D animation?
I mean, in 3D animation, it's like doing hair right or getting.
I see what you mean.
In 3D CGI, tends to be pretty bad. You tend to get hair which looks like it's sculpted out of solid rock, or
and definitely, in this case, they do take advantage of that.
They've got it sorted. They got the problem sorted before it even starts.
There's also like one character named Cinnabar, which she's based on the mineral cinnabar, which has mercury in it, so she's super poisonous, and she's constantly like dripping liquid mercury, and it looks really good too. It's super reflective, and I really like it. There's a moment where it zooms out of Diamond's eyes, and you can see like the surface of her eyes looks like a diamond would, like with all kinds of like angles and stuff, and it looks really good. Okay, it looks good, guys. I don't know if I said that.
It's funny because I wouldn't think of the show that we all kind of derided as like anime Steven Universe as being like the best looker or something. Although I know you like Steven Universe a lot, so
I do, but there's not really that Steven much Universe overlap at all, obviously.
Just like, the gym people.
Yeah. Another thing that looks good is the enemy, like the bad guys who come from the moon. They look like angelic, weird, creepy sort of beings, and they're like, their goal is to shatter the gems and take them back and use them as decorations, which is pretty fucked up. And like when they dissipate, it's almost like they're living clouds, and it looks really cool too.
When you linked one screenshot of one of the bad guys, it looked a bit like it was deliberately done to look like a statue.
Yeah, they do have that look to them. Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that's like a conscious thing? Like, so I mean, one thing is like you see gems set into statues, and is it like, is that what happens when one gem gets killed? The statue takes off and goes right in my forehead.
It could be, but when you see them, they never have like decorations. They specifically say they take the gems back to their world or back to the moon, I guess, and use them as decorations. Yeah, but like when you see them fighting, like they never have pieces of gems. They just shoot these weird hook arrows, which I'm assuming are designed to shatter more efficiently.
Yeah, that would be weirdly disturbing if they came back and they were wearing like the corpses of the other gems.
For sure, yeah. So I talked a lot about how it looks, I guess. The one interesting thing is like they all, except for the master / sensei or whatever, they all sort of present as girls, but when they refer to each other, at least in the subtitles, it's always with the gender neutral they, them, there, which is pretty interesting. Which is also sort of like how Steven Universe does it, except they do say her, but you know, if you read about Steven Universe, that they're supposed to be gender neutral, I think.
They're literal gems. They have no gender.
Exactly,
like a matter of presentation, which I don't know. That kind of reminds me that you said you wanted to comment on the Nanashi thing from Made in Abyss gender thing.
Oh yeah. We sort of got into a little argument about whether or not Nanashi was a boy or a girl, and that seems like a stupid argument to have when it's so ambiguous and we can just use an existing word like, you know, a gender neutral word, which is they, them, there. So, oops, that was a little awkward.
I mean, to go ahead and say we found the creator of Made in Abyss,
yeah.
When asked about the gender on Twitter, said that Nanashi used to have a gender as a human, but now has no gender.
Oh, yeah.
And he invites you to think about what that gender could be.
I thought Nanashi used the male pronoun when talking about themselves whatever they were, they now are something different.
It is worth pointing out, as we covered with Kino, that there's not just a male pronoun and a female pronoun. There are pronouns that are used in different social contexts, and a pronoun that might be appropriate for a female in a certain context isn't appropriate for a male, except under certain circumstances or certain age or power differences. So,
or if they just want to express themselves differently, like it's very situational. And while there are like general trends, it's not a set in stone thing. Speaking of stones, I'm going to go back to gems real quick.
Cool. Good pun.
I just want to talk a little bit about the story, too. So I think I mentioned last time that the main character, Phospholite, I think is what her full name is, but they just call her Phos, P-H-O-S. She's sort of a useless, clumsy girl who is trying to be more than she is because she sees everyone else fight, but she's so fragile and she can't fight and they won't let her fight and blah blah blah. And then she runs into Cinnabar, who's really lonely and wants to die, and she's trying to help Cinnabar find a reason to live, blah blah blah, stuff like that. I really like all the characters. They all have their own like sort of shtick to them, and it doesn't feel formulaic like it sounds like it might. They all have their own issues and they're trying to work through them with or by themselves and with each other, and so far I'm liking it a lot. Like, I like everything about the show, and I did not expect to like anything about it. Another neat thing is during the commercial breaks they show like the chemical makeup of different gyms, and I think that's kind of cool. That's just a little bit of
edutainment.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I'm trying to see I don't think the production crew is anything worth talking about.
I think it's Studio Orange, and they just do all that CG stuff, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The director is Kyo Goku Takahiko, and he's... Oh, Andy! He's the director of All the Love Lives.
Oh, good.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, Love Live is beautiful, like I've said before. And I've posted some GIFs to you guys to say how good that animation is. I'm behind on anime.
And for you, John, he was also the director of both seasons of Gate. So,
oh, okay. Well, Gate was...
So I take that back about him not having done much. He did two pretty fucking big things.
Gate wanted to be good and was sometimes good and also was sometimes not. I wish there was more Gate.
Do you?
Yeah. I'd watch it.
Okay.
Unlike Food Wars, I've definitely dropped. I don't even want to watch Food Wars
anymore. I'm watching season 3. Yeah, it's fine. It's annoying because I don't really care about where it is now.
I just don't care, so I stopped. And I also stopped Black Clover, and I stopped.
Oh, dropped Black Clover like a fucking stone. That was garbage after the second episode. I'm like, it's not worth my time.
I gave it a third. It's definitely not. Their first big arc is going to be, of course, a test tournament.
It just really wants to be My Hero Academia.
It really does.
It does.
Or what? Naruto, or... I don't want it. Yeah.
I mean, Food Wars is at least, I don't know, it's established long enough for me to care. Like, I watched 2 seasons, and that's, I think the other 2 were at least 24 episodes each.
I think so.
Yeah, so I'm so invested. I've wasted so much time in it. I'm like, I'll keep watching it because I know I'll get back into the characters again. And I have. Like, I remember why I like most of the characters. And it's just right now I'm not personally that bothered about the arc and what it's doing, but it'll pick up. I know it'll pick up because it's a long-running show, and it'll get, it's pretty big, but I just kind of wish that, like, the problem is that the end of the second season ended on like a training montage, and then ended on the training, and there wasn't really any big stakes to go back to, and now the stakes aren't that big apart from, oh, you might be expelled, which seems to be like
the thing that they say every fucking episode and every challenge is, well, you might be expelled. It's like, well, yeah, no shit, but you know he's not. So stop making that as like a big like dagger over his head, because it would be a stupid show if he got expelled, because then you won't have the main protagonist, which would be very interesting if he did get expelled and then he would just be left like to do I don't know what. But yeah, it's fine. It's good. I enjoy it a lot. I like Shokugeki no Soma, and I like it for the reasons that it's still on there. And we've previously explained, and I can't watch it without eating food, otherwise I get incredible food envy.
Which is exactly what doesn't happen when I watch Asake wa Fufu.
Fuck.
I love making cocktails and drinking cocktails, and God, the third episode was a mocktail, which is, we've already talked about this. I am having kind of a slump season. I watched the first two episodes of March Comes in Like a Lion, the second season of it, and they're fine. It just literally picks up right where it left off. The opening scene's just Ray, the main character, who's, you know, a 18-year-old professional shogi player, just opens a window to his depressing, barren apartment. And it's like, well, it's May now, which makes me kind of sad that it's not May Comes in Like a Lion, but but that's it. And it just goes right back. He like goes to fucking school and goes to the like science club that's also the shogi club. And yeah, it's been fine. And
how is the science shogi fine. Club? Because I liked that ending. I wanted to see more of those characters.
We may not agree then, because I think that it's overly twee in a way that March Comes in Like a Lion generally avoids. The guy with like,
except for the cats. Like,
huge facial hair. And yeah, I love the cats though. Cats are okay.
Cats guys are okay, but like, mustaches aren't.
Well, guys who look like fucking Marie Curie's husband, being like, oh, welcome to the, and he's like playing shogi. He's like, this is really hard. Does it get better when you get good? And Ray's like, no, it gets worse. The more skill you have, the more you get disappointed. They're like, oh, do you even like playing shogi, Ray? And he's like, but I don't know. They're whatever. It's, I think that you, have you watched Honey and Clover, John? No. I know Duncan has.
I haven't.
I think if you like the hijinks of the shogi science club, and if you like the teacher's character, the kind of like serious mentor, but also kind of
I love the teacher.
A mess. Yeah. What's that?
I love the teacher a lot. Yeah.
You might want to give Honey and Clover a try. It's 39 episodes. That's, you know, a bit of an ask, but it feels remarkably like March Comes in Like a Lion, except that it has a really terrible love triangle with a Moe Blob girl at its head, which is miserable. She's supposed to be 18, and she is drawn and acts as if she is 6 or 7 years old, and they never really comment on
She's terrible. It does have a great failed doomed romance on the side, though.
Yes. Oh no. Yeah. Yamada's romance with it's not even a romance, because like he's already rejected her in the first episode of the show, and it's just the entire run of the show is her just like getting to a place where she's okay not being with him and not being in love with him anymore, and it's so good. And the rest of the show doesn't really deserve it. But anyway, I feel like March Comes in Like a Lion improves a lot of this in every way. The second episode gets into Goto, the guy who is cheating on his wife with Ray's adopted sister.
Yeah. Mm.
The really like awful abusive guy. They get in his background, and it's like you get to learn these characters a bit more, and I kind of just enjoy existing in the space. And if this anime runs on for 8 seasons, I don't think I'll ever really get tired of it, just because characters are introduced, you learn about characters. It's not like Shigeki no Soma, where you need to have like a crisis going on. The crisis is just being alive in this world and having these feelings and this depression and anxiety.
Alright. Well, I haven't watched any of the new episodes yet.
I was going to say, have all three of the shows we're talking about this week had a main character who's depressed?
I mean, I wouldn't say Foss is depressed necessarily, but she's definitely down on herself.
You've also forgot Land of the Lustrous, which I assume has no depression. That makes me more interested.
I was going to say, I thought John said the girl who sweat cyanide, or
Cinnabar. Oh, I guess yeah. She's depressed. She definitely just wants to die.
So she's just the supporting rather than the sort of one the main.
I think she's going to become more of a main role, but yeah, okay. So far she's kind of. Minor.
I wasn't sure if it was like a group of main or just one main sort of supporting, because it's always
it's been expanding with each episode. Yeah. Like more and more characters are becoming more important. So,
Cool.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask a question
about Legolion.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So I remember you being quite down on the second half, or at least the end of the second half of the first season of March Comes in Like a Lion. Wow. Like the last six episodes or so, right? Like,
yes, you were kind of bummed out. The Shimada arc where he's kind of just training with and accompanying this top level shogi champion.
Yeah. So does this new season, like, is it back on track for you?
It's actually interesting because the second episode really goes into depth about how, like, they basically go out and tell you and that you're not going to see Shimada for a few episodes. Like, after you get defeated that severely,
you kind of have
to be alone and re-examine your life and just kind of recenter. And so I think if I were ever to watch it all again, which unfortunately is unlikely, but who knows, heaven is deep and life is long, but it would be interesting to see it as a piece of where Rei kind of intersects with this champion and accompanies him and kind of learns his philosophy and his play style. And then we switch into Rei having to be on his own again, because we're like, okay, yeah, Shimada's got to go heal. And I don't know the full reach. Most of the reason I was really, really down on the end of the first season of March Comes in Like a Lion was because I didn't know it was the first season. And
yeah, that's true.
I thought it was the whole run of the show. And if it was only itself, I would be very confused about why we basically kind of take leave of Rei, or Rei to a reflection of these other characters' anxieties. Because I like Rei a lot, and my favorite scenes are the ones with the three sisters who he's friends with and the cats in them. But overall, I like following Rei's story the most, and while I appreciate the storytelling craft that means that we get to see these other people's lives and follow them for a bit, I kind of always want to return to Rei and return to watching him grow, because I don't like the feeling that I'm missing out on his growth while I go see whatever's up with some dude who's, you know, the weird guy with like the page boy who dresses in like pinstripe shirts and stuff. Like, he's fine, but I'm here for Rei. And so, yeah. So, do you guys want to go ahead and take a break, and then we can go ahead and pitch our stuff to Andy?
Yeah.
Yep. Just in case you guys mentioned it while I nipped off to the toilet, did you talk about Just Because at all? It's the best thing so far. It's actually really good.
Are you watching Live or Evil? Which is such a bad
name. No, wait. chill out for a second. We can stick this in the break. Duncan, what's good about Just Because? Can you give like a 30-second pitch?
Basically, please say Just Because.
Andy, shut up.
It reminds me very... it's a really sincere high school drama, which is a rarity, because nowadays I'm used to them being comedies. And instead it's like... about this kid who had to move away from his childhood area because his dad changed work and has now had to come back just for his final year of college, and he's sort of making contact with his old friends again. It's just has like this weird end of youth vibe to it, but sort of melancholy and I don't know, it's just different from some of the sort of bubblegum bright high school hijinks which I've
it feels like a reverse of like the traditional like rose tinted view on school life and high school life. Is that right?
It's not necessarily negative, but it's more, as I say, melancholy is the best I can and describe it as. It's sort of like this, he sort of feels really sort of displaced, like he's like he comes back and he bumps into his his sort of best friend from his childhood, and they barely recognize each other. And it's sort of about them, a good portion of the first episode's about them reconnecting. And it was just, they just got this everything spot on.
Is it earnest? It sounds pretty earnest.
Yeah, so it's really in earnest. And I don't know, as I say, most high school stuff that Anri throws at me is not very earnest. So that was a nice change. Actually, the one big thing I was surprised we didn't get Umaru-chan mentioned in the new season.
Well, that's because when I brought it out last time, we got shot down faster than I could even say the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, so. because you put it between like Pingu and the city and shit. Like you earned this. Like, oh, Pingu in the city. Umaru-chan. Sorry,
Pingu in the city, the highest voted anime in MAU. Yeah, of course I'm going to mention it.
Yeah, evidence MAU is garbage. I know I told you guys not to let me call things garbage, but I can't find another word for MAU because it's the worst site. Anyway.
What was the other thing I saw? Blend S, which is like a coffee shop version of working.
Oh, that wasn't good.
Crappy, mean working.
It was bad. Right? It was really bad.
I enjoyed bits of it. It wasn't good, but it had enjoyable bits.
Did you laugh at any of it?
Yeah, I did.
I can't remember. Duncan's
a tough laugh, too. That's saying something.
No, it wasn't good.
What the hell? Did you just fall out? What the?
Just swept his desk clean. He's like, nope, not good. Podcast over.
I nudged my desk and my mic fell off. So that's going to be an interesting noise come the edit.
And we're back for the second half of our podcast, as I'm sure you've come to expect. Andy, the person who pitched our last Spotlight anime, is going to review pitches from the rest of us, me, Duncan, and John, and pick one that we will be watching and talking about next time we record.
I'm looking forward to this.
I'm glad. Well, who wants to go first?
My head a little bit, I'm not going to lie.
I guess I'll go first because I am the king of this podcast.
Go ahead,
and save the best for last, okay, Amy.
And we are merely jesters. That's what we're saying.
Well, we're all jesters. This is a jester world. RPG.
Jester world. I love that game.
Okay, so I thought a while about trying to pitch an anime that is very Andy, but instead I just decided that I'd pitch one that I'd really love, and shonen battle manga style, my heart will shine through and you'll be unable to avoid how this is the best one to pick. Okay. I say that we should watch Jinrui wa Suitai Shimashita, otherwise known as Humanity Has Declined. We talked about this a lot because it is a very weird fairy tale-esque comedy anime that takes place in a post-singularity, almost post-apocalyptic world where humans are no longer the dominant species. In fact, now fairies are the dominant intelligent race. And it follows this one girl who's known variously as W or Watashi because she's never given a name. Her name is just me or I. And kind of goes through her various experiences in this surreal kind of cotton candy fairy tale landscape. Involves such amazing things as sentient bread and the Voyager satellite and her friend Y from school reinventing boy love doujin. It's light. It's a good episode. It's light. It's funny. It's really interesting. It does some cool things with the chronology because the episodes aren't necessarily in chronological order, and kind of has to deal with, you know, it's not a happy anime, but it's kind of a positive one, if that makes sense. I really enjoy it, and I've been meaning to rewatch it for a long time now, and I think it's one of the greats. So
it's one that sort of takes joy in life, even though life is reaching its end.
Yeah.
Out of interest, what was the one you were gonna pick?
I was actually to kind of spoil from the first bit, I was gonna pitch KO in the movie and see if I could talk to you in that way. Some other time, Andy. Another time.
Yeah.
Anyway, time. Who's going next?
I don't think John said he was going to be last, so then falls to me, I guess.
Are we allowed to do that? Just to say, like, I don't want to go?
I guess. Because apparently I'm going now.
Okay.
Okay, Andy, I'm going to do this a bit unusually. I'm not going to tell you the title. I'm just going to pitch the show to you on the basis of what I think of it, and you can just judge from that. So anyway, it's a... magical oddity of puns, video game references, anime references, people getting hit with a giant paper fan, naughty's cheesy Japanese rap music opening titles with more puns, lying, and plenty of fan service. And in my anime list, its genre is listed as comic, ecchi, parody, and fantasy. And its rated R for mild nudity.
Can I have a guess of what it
13 episodes from 2002. And you may guess what it is, but I might not answer.
Jeez. I mean, I have to know what this name is. Or is this going to be... But I thought my first initial instinct was Samurai Champloo, but now when you said 2002, I have a feeling it isn't. Because that has a bad rap in it. But now I don't know.
Has some sick
what
beatboxing
it
though. I know which one it is because
you know I do like that show. I could just pretend that was what I was pitching.
I mean it sounds like Ben knows what it is.
I know what it is. I'm good like this.
Is he?
I also know you, Duncan, so I know this very well.
Yeah, I'm probably more of a giveaway than the actual show itself. It has in its staff some people who will go on to do great things.
Have we talked about it before?
Yes.
Exile Saga?
Ooh, that'd be good. Same I vintage, wish. 26 episodes is too much of an ask for us, though.
I give up. What's the name? Hit it.
Do you want to say what you think it is, Ben?
I can say what I know it is. It's Magical Shopping Arcade of Inuyasha.
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, Magical Shopping. Yeah, that sounds good. You've talked about it. That'll be fun. Yeah, okay.
It's a Gainax Madhouse dual production from the director of Monster and Master Keaton. And Made in Abyss.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Master Keaton's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The final episode's directed by Iyamashi.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's produced by Hiroyuki Yamaga, also known as the meal ticket guy from Blue Blazes.
And what is it that you like specifically about it, Cody?
It was one of the first shows I saw which I really sort of liked. But then it was really flawed in a lot of ways, but it just had so much charm that I just enjoyed my time with it immensely, and it made me laugh a lot, and it has more depth than I gave it credit the first time I watched it. And it's a really enjoyable watch, but I do think there's depth to be found in it if we want to.
Yeah, right. I think it's a good companion piece to Fooly Cooly, with a different style, but similar fantastical preoccupations, I feel like, and like more mundane thematic ones.
Yeah, it's there's definitely a sort of events sort of reflect, well, literally reflecting the inner life of the people in it, in both those shows.
Cool.
Well, John, if you pick something I like, then I will have a win-win situation with with whoever
John,
Andy chooses.
If you pick something Ben doesn't like, I'm more likely to choose it.
Oh, sick. I got it. We're going to watch Dragon Ball Z.
Yes!
No, only the episode where Vegeta grows a mustache. Or gets his mustache.
GT. We can't watch GT. Yep.
That's we need skipping. That mustache lore. We need that dank mustache lore.
So sort of to counter what Duncan just said about depth, I feel like we always go for trying to do deep stuff. I just want to do something fun and light that we can just all enjoy. So I don't think this is going to be picked, but I'm pitching Tsuritama, which is a fun show about fishing and aliens and friendship and good times all around. And also a funny duck.
And also depression and anxiety and death and abandonment.
I mean, a little bit, but I think it's sad, though.
I love Tsuritama. I absolutely love that anime. I thought that was great.
Yeah, you do.
And I also went to see the Sky Tree after that, and then was quite upset when there was no Tsuritama stuff throughout the whole of Yokohama. And then there was another anime, which is like a musical, like a musical show, Kano maybe? No, that's not it. I can't remember, sure. But that was all over instead, which was also set in Yokohama.
I think Tsuritama is in Inoshima, not Yokohama.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, Inoshima. Yes, you're right. Well, whatever. I went there. It was fun.
Inoshima being an island to the north of Japan is kind of isolated. Water,
so yeah. Plenty of places for fishing, which is largely what they do.
Isn't Sky Tree on the actual island, and then the rest, most of it's set offshore on the actual inland island place, which is a very popular, like...
I don't know, I'm getting beyond my knowledge. I don't know.
Because I think the thing that's really good for that place is it's very close to Tokyo, but it's far out that it's pretty cheap to live there, so it's sort of just like a business town where people just go to Tokyo from it. What I remember is right, when I went to visit. But yeah, that's a great anime. So now I've got to decide between three like really good shows. Fuck, I feel for you two for
it's
making
it's not great,
these decisions.
Yeah.
No. See, Humanity Has Declined, I watched an episode, and I enjoyed it, and then I just sort of dropped it. I forgot why. I think I was moving, and then I just never bothered to pick it up. Magical Shopping, I haven't heard anything about, and as I have no internet right now, I can't really search it. And Tsuritama, I adore, but it is very light. I also think that it'll be more fun to pitch to Duncan in 2 weeks' time, so I'm going to say Magical Shopping.
Boo, yes. Don't game the shit.
Boo. Bad. I did say I was trying to go for the trifecta. I did need something which had lying.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was on the fence, and then if Ben hadn't mentioned Foolie Cooley, I wouldn't have picked it. But it was that Foolie Cooley drop that made me choose it. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to watching Magical Shopping. What's it called?
Magical Shopping Arcade Abinobashi. Or
am I allowed to ask a question about John's one, even though we're not watching it?
Well,
yeah.
Even more so now that we're not watching it, I think.
I seem to remember starting to watch that show because of some other show. What was the staff or the studio behind it?
I can't tell you that.
Can I duck in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, duck in.
It's all you.
I am rocking it. Tsuritama is the Gatchaman Crowds guy.
Oh well, that's good.
It's the Gatchaman
Crowds actually.
But that was before Gatchaman Crowds, wasn't it? Or am I making that up?
Yeah, it is. It's the he's the Mononoke director.
Let's watch Mononoke.
No, let's not watch Mononoke.
It's good. It is good.
He's the C, the Money of Soul and Possibility Control director.
I don't know that one.
Eh.
I mean, I would have said Ben, if you had picked Kaon, I would have chosen it for sure.
So. Well, I'll know that next time.
I don't think I would actually. I don't know.
There's you that wanna, line we talked about.
You want to know something though? I was going to suggest that Humanity Has Declined, and then you said it, and I was like, well, now I got to pick something else. So I did.
I've been thinking about it a lot lately because I was telling it to a friend of mine about how like it's a show that's kind of just about this girl and like how she's kind of shitty sometimes and kind of not shitty some other times, and it has a very distinct continuity of like personhood, I feel like.
I mean, it like came up in our discussions of Keynote a lot. So
Yeah, it's a very post-humanity sort of thing.
I was actually
going to
bring it up in the context of Last Girl's Tour as well, but we didn't, because we didn't talk about it.
Well, we're not watching Tsuritama, so at least I can be happy with that. And I just watched Abinobashi like 2 or 3 years ago. It's very interesting. I think we'll have a lot to talk about, and it's the closest thing we can get to watching Excel Saga while not having to spend 13 hours of our life on it.
I was going to do Excel Saga, but just the length. I was so tempted to say the first season of Excel Saga,
the first core, but the end. It would be difficult. We'll have to figure out how we can do longer stuff in the framework of this anime, of this podcast, anime podcast.
I mean, maybe we can. Yeah, because I don't know if I really like Excel Saga. I think I watched it. Maybe I think I mentioned this before. I watched it without watching a lot of anime, so I think a lot of the jokes fell on deaf ears, as it were. But I don't know whether I want to rewatch it in case I just to find that I still didn't enjoy it that much.
I think it's very good, and I think it would not be very funny if you did not know anything about anime.
Yeah, I think the more anime you watch, the more you're going to appreciate Excel Saga.
Because there's the one where they're making fun of baseball anime, and it's all just like joking baseball puns, and it looks like nonsense if you don't.
Can I just watch Excel Saga while you guys all watch Banobashi?
You can
do both. You can do some extra credit. Okay, yeah. Let's go ahead and wrap this up because Andy's on his phone because his internet's down. So yeah,
awesome.
So we don't have any questions, I assume. You can't check even if we did.
Did that guy ever tell you what anime recommendations?
No.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, so we have no questions, but if you want to hear us answer a question on this podcast that's anime or manga related, or even Japanese culture related, you can mail us at keyframespodcast@gmail.com, or you can message us on Facebook, facebook.com/keyframespodcast. Comment and message us there. Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes at just search for Keyframes Podcast. Or follow us on Twitter at KeyframesPod. I think that's the long and short of it. Tell someone about this podcast. Watch some anime.
Yep.
Come into our world. Okay, say goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Everybody.